Hey, and welcome to another edition of the Finger Lakes Board Sports Podcast on FingerLakes1.com, brought to you by RochesterWindSports.com and the hardworking people here in Seneca Falls, New York, at FingerLakes1.com. It's right around 1 p.m., the day before Thanksgiving 2014. Put another log on the fire and sit back for an entertaining episode of the Finger Lakes Board Sports Podcast. I'm Doug Willard, but ladies and gentlemen, Jason Gordon back in studio. Aside for sore eyes, he's here. Jason Gordon.
Hello.
The awesome co-host with an awesome piece of equipment behind him we'll get to talk about a little bit later in the show. You been good, Jay?
Doing fine, thank you.
Doing
happy
good.
To be here. Thanks
yeah.
for
it's great. You've been a busy man. You look more, well,
My
it's
flushing.
Exciting. It's exciting. You've been well. All right.
Yeah.
We're also going to have a Finger Lakes Coffee Roasters coffee break mid-show. And Jay and I are going to go seasonal with only one coffee, but have a sip. There. Look at us using the product, and that's great product placement. The Finger Lakes
Primo.
Coffee Roasters label there. And it's a mix of it's one coffee, a mix of many. But first, we've got a telephone guest calling in, our local representative in Hatteras this fall at the AWT Hatteras Wave Jam, local windsurfer extraordinaire coming on the show. He competed in the Masters Division, and he placed in the Masters Division. He chases after life. He lives it to the fullest. He tempts death and fate all the time. Ladies and gentlemen, via phone, from Rochester, New York, please welcome Jimmy King. Jimmy, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Well, I don't sound like Jimmy King today, but I got a little bit of I'm trying to fight off this Ebola thing. It should be
about 5 days. We shouldn't
anyway,
laugh.
We got a bit of a chest cold, but it's great to be here, and it's great to be part of the show.
Yeah, well, Jimmy, it was you went a step further, and made the trek down there. Well, a trip you make a lot of times. Down to North Carolina, down to Hatteras, but things worked out this year, and you managed to register yourself and get in and compete in the American Windsurfing Tour Hatteras Wave Jam in the Masters Division, organized by Sam Bittner, who Jay and I had called into the show a number of episodes ago. But how'd it go? Tell us about it. I mean, sure, it was quite a scene. Tell us about the vibe, the people you met. I mean, what was your impression overall?
Well, it was very exciting, to say the least. I mean, there's only one other tour in the world, and that's the PWA, and the AWT was a tour that was basically started by members of the PWA that wanted a different venue. So you get to sail and hang out with the best in the world, the best in this sport, and that... you know, that goes without saying, an incredible experience. The deal here with this year, I really had not planned on competing.
No kidding, okay.
This year, I did join the first AWT competition I signed up for, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago in Hatteras, and the hurricane hit the island.
Sandy.
And split it up in about three pieces, and we had to cancel that particular venue, so I wasn't able to do that. Now, this time, I was going down there on vacation with my wife. We're actually looking to relocate there and live there. It's one of my favorite places on Earth. And since the AWT was down there, I thought about it. And, well, just to correct you, too, let's not get people too excited like Joe Herbert saying that I competed in the Masters, because we got to kind of clarify that. That
would
be the Grand Masters.
Well, that's even more. That's, I mean, you throw Grand. That's like when I drive down the street and...
The Grand Masters.
But when you drive down the street and you see the Chinese...
And that convinced me also to possibly compete. It's a new group. They basically have a pro category, which, you know, those are the best pros in the world are in it. Then you have an amateur category, which anybody can compete in, other than a pro. And then they have the Masters, which is 45 and over. And that's a tough group there, because you got a lot of your extremely experienced sailors in that group that still are physically in great shape and not too beat up.
That sounds like the Rochester contingent you're describing.
Yeah, that's true. And then they had
or Finger Lakes as well.
Grandmasters are for the guys that just won't let go of this sport. these are probably the most experienced. that. And then when I signed up, it turns out there were more people competing in my bracket than in the pro division. So it was definitely an exciting and challenging bracket to be in.
You got conditions, and at the same time, though, there's a good scene that goes along with the AWT, right? I mean, people were on the beach, and they weren't kind of secretly secluding themselves because they were worried about the competition. How was the camaraderie among the participants?
It's great because, yeah, you're right. There, a lot of times in competitive sports, there's an inherent issue that the competitors kind of, you know, they put like a bubble around them because they're just so focused and they don't want to talk to anybody and all that. But that's not the way it is with this group of people. These people are great. They're like the people in our club. They all get along great. You know, we all eat lunch together, do everything together. It's just like a bunch of friends getting together. And to be honest with you, the cool thing too is this. The conditions there, they weren't very strong winds, and as you all know, my biggest sales are 4.7. Well, you needed at least a 5.2 to a 5.7 for the competition, and I had two people lend me sails in order to compete. I didn't even use my own gear other than my board during the competition, which is really cool. You know, I mean, what else can you go to a venue where somebody's going to say, hey, here, take my skis or use my tennis racket. You know what I mean?
It's a pretty cool vibe.
It's a great bunch of people. It's just really, really cool.
Wow. Excellent. Now, when you had to find the conditions, did you have to hop all around the beach to find where the day was going to be? Or was it pretty much set up where it was going to, you know, this is kind of where the event is. How did that all play out?
Well, down in Hatteras,
Never been there.
Park service, too, because it is a national park. So permitting has to take place, and they have permits for, I believe, 3 or 4 areas. Now, this is all ocean sailing only, so in order to access the ocean, you either have to have four-wheel drive or you have to have a venue that's close enough to walk over. We were lucky enough that we held the venue every day at Isabel's, which is south of Frisco and just north of Hatteras, and it's a part of the island that's extremely narrow, so it's cool. There's just a little parking lot there. You cross Highway 12, and then they have a boardwalk goes up over the dunes, and then boom, there's the beach, 100 feet, you know, and you're in the water. And the only thing is, in order to catch the waves, these venues started between 7 and 7:30 a.m. So it was get up early and get down there
for the forecast stuff.
Because once a high tide comes in, then the waves dissipate.
So in your events, how did that go? In your heat, how many heats were you in?
I was in originally. I probably would have been in 2, but I had to run 3 heats. Our initial heat we ran, the way the judging goes in this competition, it's a wave sailing competition, so unless you're on a wave, there's no points being awarded. You don't get awarded for sailing out or sailing back in. You get awarded for how you ride a wave.
Okay.
If you're not on a wave, you don't score any points.
Okay.
And in the first heat, believe it or not, none of us caught a wave. I mean, it's very difficult. Waves come and go, you know, via Mother Nature, and you got 15, 20 minutes out there to catch a wave and score some rides. So the first heat, we just kind of wore ourselves out trying to get on a wave, and we had to rerun. And then I talked to one of the pros right before my second heat, and I says, man, how am I going to do this? You know, I'm not used to this. Number one, we were sailing offshore winds. We don't sail that kind of conditions around here.
Sure.
And because it's like suicidal. But on the ocean, it's a little different. But offshore conditions make for the best wave riding conditions because you can ride down the line because the wind's blowing right at you. And the waves obviously are running sideways. The second heat, one of the guys there, he's been on the pro tour for quite a while. His name's Ferdinando, and I believe he's from Italy.
Yeah, Fernando Lofredo, I believe.
He says you need to get out far enough to get speed. you get the speed, he says, you just keep it and go and go and go and come into the break zone. And it's 50-50. You're going to get a wave or you're not. But if you get a wave, you got the speed to ride it. Yeah. And I followed that advice, and I caught four waves on my second heat. And if the competition had ended then, I probably would have placed even higher, because I came into the beach and better than any trophy anyone could ever get. Kevin Pritchard, who's the four-time world champ, was one of the guest judges. You know, he came up to me and he says, you know, that was some fine sailing. And I'll tell you.
Nice, Jimmy.
Away, you know, and I said, man, I feel so good. I'll be stoked forever with that. You know?
Yeah.
Put a warm, fuzzy feeling all over me. I said, that's great. So then we had to run a third heat. And I said, well, how long do I have before we go out? I said, but you got 5 minutes, because you got to be kidding me. And I had to borrow another sail because the wind had died off.
Yeah.
And so one of the guys in the parking lot says, here, and he lent me this Ezzy 5.4. I'd never even sailed it. I just rigged it up, and I was going to go out and practice. And they go, no, you got 5 minutes to hit the water. Well, there's no time to do that. So I just went and just prayed that everything would work. And it wasn't the greatest heat in the world for me. I only caught a couple waves. But the cool thing was is that when it was all said and done and over with, and the awards ceremony came up, you know, and then they announced my name as third place, that was, like, really, really cool.
Yeah, most
congratulations.
Definitely. So cool. So cool.
And out of curiosity, how big were the waves when they did roll in?
Well, and they varied. This was not a huge, competition. The waves were considered by most small. I would say, I don't know, probably averaging 4 foot. There might have been a 5 or 6 foot wave in there, but basically 4 foot. They were not big, but again, you got to remember too, these are ocean waves.
Yeah.
And
that sounds great.
A 3 foot ocean wave can totally clean you up and spit you out.
So in body size measurement, is that chest to head high kind of waves, or
good
bigger?
Yeah, I would say that. Yeah,
nice.
Yeah, chest high. You know, and I used to, every once in a while, like, let's put it this way. We had the expression session.
That sounds like
the waves were high enough that Kevin Pritchard did a one-handed, one-footed back loop.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't seen one of those in real
on purpose.
Real, on purpose.
Yeah, one foot, one hand, on purpose, back loop.
Wow. What were you throwing?
Yeah, I was
sounds
throwing
like a groin injury.
Sounds like a groin. You're throwing up water. Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah, yeah,
man.
Well, here was the deal. When you sail offshore winds and you're not experienced, you don't know exactly where the what they call the no-go zone is. In the surf line, if you fall in, you got to get right back up, because if you get too close to shore, there is no wind, because there's a dune that runs all along the shore, and it acts as a buffer. So
there's a shadow right near
shore. Very little to no wind right at the surf line.
Oof.
And you cannot water start at all. And then once you get out about 200, 300 feet, it'll be blowing, you know, 4, 5, 5-0.
Wow. Does that affect the wind quality, or is there a definite wind line where the wind is okay beyond that?
Oh, yeah, there's definitely a wind line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
further out you go, but I mean, there were times where I was afraid I was going to be disqualified for going too far out, but I had to get out there in order to get power up and get stoked, you know, and then I'd search around for a gust that looked like it would carry me into the surf line, and then I'd catch it and come in and run it and, you know, do my heat.
Nice.
Well, I think I looked and saw, and you and I had a discussion. Overall, in the AWT, all their events, you ended up taking 7th overall for the tour, did you not, in your age group?
Oh,
as a grandmaster?
Yeah, the points category, it's kind of like, you know, World Cup in skiing. Even if you don't compete in every venue, you score so many points per venue, and then at the end of the year, based on how many points you have, it's how you finish up. It's like the guy that ended up winning the Masters division overall didn't even place at Hoekipa in the finals. He never even made it to the finals, but he didn't have to because he had enough points overall
in the other venues
that, as far as the overall championship, you know, he got. got it. And like for me, I scored enough points in the Hatteras venue that, well, actually there were three of us tied for seventh place. But yeah, in the whole tour, I was in seventh place, yes.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool. Well, hey, listen, Jimmy, have a happy Thanksgiving, and you better, you know, get under a blanket and get yourself healthy. And,
yeah, I got to do something here because I'm starting. I don't even recognize my own voice.
You don't
here.
Sound like you. You don't sound like the mayor of Windy.
By the way, I just wanted to shout out a big hi to all the guys and all you hardcore sailors that came out 2 days ago to Seneca. That was great. I ended up, that was right before I got real sick. I went down, I skied for an hour, went to Seneca and sailed for 2 hours. Doesn't get any better than that.
Right. Good
old
big score.
New York.
Nice, nice. Well, hey, happy Thanksgiving, Jimmy, and we'll catch up. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, Jim.
All
right,
see ya.
Bye.
Interesting, right?
Yeah.
Have you do people kite that location down there, or is that not a kiting location?
No.
Isabel's, is that what you said?
Yep, depending on the wind direction. I'm not positive what would work best for that. If it's around the corner at that part of the stretch, I believe a south, let's see, around the corner would be the southeast, maybe?
Okay.
Yeah. And so it really depends with the Outer Banks down that way near Hatteras having an elbow at Buxton.
Yep.
Beyond the lighthouse, you're around the corner and a different wind direction works better. And it also depends, like he was saying, in the conditions he was in, it was probably a northwest. If it was offshore at Isabel's, then down by Frisco, that would be offshore on the ocean, would be a northeast wind. So.
I was thinking as you were talking about that, I would get rinsed. Good sailors get rinsed down there, but trying to orienting my equipment to water start, you know, around here we've got wind-driven swell, so whatever way the winds, you know, having the waves come in one way but the wind going another way is, for somebody who doesn't do it that often, what a unique change.
Yeah, not only. Yeah, because
you get used to.
Yeah, even, I mean, here sometimes we get used to, if we're on the big lake, used to having westerlies.
Yeah.
And be it a northwesterly or straight west or southwest, and you get used to the wave wind orientation. And then suddenly we have a northeast, you know, a handful of times a year, and you just that 180 degrees or 90 degree switch in the wind direction can throw a monkey wrench in your normal plan of attack. It's like, wait a minute, I'm not used to doing
it's
this.
It's not memory, muscle memory, right?
And then you go to offshore winds. It's got to be a completely different experience. I've never sailed offshore.
Good
winds.
For him.
Yeah.
The King of Bail,
yeah.
Jimmy King.
Yeah.
So what have you been up to?
Well,
you've gotten some sessions. You were out. Yes. He was just giving a shout out to people that got down
we had
to Seneca.
A really beautiful day.
Monday?
On Monday at Seneca. Yeah, it was in the low 60s, I think. Bunch of folks. There were some sharks. There were some kites. We had a good day. I was in a wetsuit, like a 6'4" wetsuit, 6'5" wetsuit, and without a hood. Or at one point, I took my gloves off. So I was just happy to be out getting a session. Yeah, it was crazy. It was a turbulent weather pattern that day.
Yeah,
and so you'd go from just complete nuke and squall to nothing. I mean, 12 meter kites couldn't make it go at some point, and then literally 15 minutes later it would be too much for a 9.
Yeah, I was tracking along with it on the group me and on the forum. Brad put up a post about the range and even from a couple windsurfers that it was tough.
Not only range, but the direction changed dramatically. Later in the afternoon, it went from having some east in it to having a lot of west in it. And I rode up to where the windsurfers were launching and found Art and another guy. Didn't recognize him. He was up a little further and talked with Art for a little while in the water and just said, you know, and he was just kind of waiting for, you could see a big cloud puff coming, and it was going to clearly pick up. And the joke that day was it's either going to get stronger or it's going to get weaker. So that's one thing you can count on.
Oh.
Yeah.
Can count on that.
Sure enough, like 5 minutes later, Art, you see him, you know, planing solidly across the water because a squall came through and it picked up dramatically. It was pretty amazing day.
I remember being in, it was kind of a situation like that, and on Seneca Lake – it was in the springtime, but you could feel either the warmth come through or it would get colder in the air. Cold water then, but like, did you have any of that sensation?
Yeah.
It was bad. It was amazing.
Lynn and I had that very conversation. We were on the beach and he said, well, you can feel that. And I said, I just felt like a tropical breeze come through, and then it had cooled off at that point.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. That was a good day. That was it was good to see everyone. A lot of good
good therapy.
Yeah, it was good to be on the water. And then got us a quick session yesterday up at Southwick on Lake Ontario. It's the east end of Lake Ontario, with a couple guys from Rochester. And it was started out not so strong. It was only like 20 to 25 knots. And by the time I got ready to rig, it had clearly jumped up several notches and went out briefly on an 8 meter with straight onshore winds, and then was only out for 15-20 minutes with that before I came ashore completely overpowered and switched to my 6. And it was straight onshore. It was really tough. The surf, it got so windy that the surf was just like completely blown out. There was no outside. I mean, going as far out as I did, probably maybe half mile, 3/4 mile, there was no end to the waves being just blown out.
Yeah.
Sometimes on the outside they get a little more clean, and they're standing up a little more when it hits the shallower water. But at no point, it was just so windy that it just was completely blown out. And with straight onshore winds, it was kind of hard to have much fun going parallel to the waves all the time. It was hard to do what.
Well, you show me some footage, and we'll get to it. We'll talk about how you did, but you showed me some footage of it, and it looked like it did look like just breaking, just disorganized mush to the horizon.
Yeah,
and
it was it's always fun.
You got out, but sometimes it's frustrating. You and I talked about that on the way down.
Yeah,
that you're glad to get out and get a session, but then sometimes when things don't, you said Monday you were landing tricks and jumps, and it was you were in the zone kind of, and then maybe because of the conditions, maybe it being washed out, you were out kiting, but it was a frustrating session in that it just wasn't working for you.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah, the expectation to have a big wave session, and then it being not the greatest conditions. And especially with the drive that was 2 hours each way, it was a little hard to swallow, but just happy to get out there.
When
so,
Southwick is good, though, it's good. So who was out there? It was you?
Lynn and Greg. Yeah. Greg. Yeah. So.
Excellent.
But I understand there was some frustration with the windsurfers on Seneca even, and I could see why, because it was, although we had a good day on Seneca, it was highly variable and a challenge to work with those conditions. And I could imagine with the windsurfing rig, having to switch your sail a lot and be doing great 1 minute and literally the next minute be just completely slogging or even, in the water because you can't get started again would be tough.
Yeah, and cold.
The water's getting cold. So,
did you get a sense for like a bubble or a dome at all kind of from the – an area from the surface of the water up, or did you feel like it was just wind variability? It wasn't like,
well, that's funny you say that. When I stopped up to see Art up at the jetty there, he made that very comment. He said, well, at least you guys, are closer to the source, because today, for whatever reason, it's just dead down here.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of his comments. So I think there was like a bubble effect going on. For whatever reason, it was not as good down lower.
Close and, to the surface of the water.
Yeah. So
Bill made that observation.
Did he?
Yeah. And okay. He was one of the guys that was out windsurfing that day, and he said, "Well, I might have to go to the dark side."
Yeah.
And
that was an interesting comment. We talked about that yesterday. So
needs to get a fix.
We got you on our radar. Snow is coming, so now's the time.
Seriously. So snow, and people started. Hopefully, everybody in Buffalo and South Buffalo that's digging out from all the snow that hammered out there.
Yeah.
Hopefully everybody's safe and things are doing well. People started around here, started talking about the potential of, you see snow, snow kiting.
Yep. Yeah. There's a lot of that going around the day or two after the snowstorm hit them. And I don't think anyone actually made it down because the roads were still questionably passable.
Yeah.
So,
and you said, Lynn made the observation too, that
they're still recovering.
Yeah.
And, you don't want to make it any more complicated by
poor,
Yeah.
Poor taste. You know, maybe. Well, it could be construed that way.
Maybe. Yeah.
You know,
which is a valid
being sensitive. Yeah.
Valid point. Yeah. So, but definitely that's around the corner. I think our Monday with that 60 degree weather and reasonably warm water, I think that's going to be over pretty soon.
Yeah.
Hopefully get a couple more before the snow really starts.
So where are you when you do get out? I mean, you're a skier.
Yep.
Too. Where do you where are people going to get out? I got an email just the other day from a woman curious, hey, tell me about snow kiting. Where can I go? What can I do? There's obviously, depending on location, safety.
Yeah. Well, locally, wind quality on the water, as we all know, wind quality is always something we fight with. So that's something to consider in your choice of venue. You may see a great field somewhere and say, oh, that's going to be great. It's wide open. But it's tough to really find a field unless it's at the top of a hill where it doesn't have some obstruction from a tree line or buildings. So wind direction has a lot to do with it. If you have an unobstructed field, that's a great place to go. At the same time, often an unobstructed field means there's a lot of wind, and if it's on a hilltop, the snow blows away. So that can be hard to find a combination of decent wind quality, decent snow cover on land. And so I can say locally, the best luck I've had with snow kiting has been on either Irondequoit Bay when it freezes up sufficiently or on Long Pond or Cranberry Pond.
So yeah. Ponds when they're frozen.
Because that's a big flat surface. Whether the snow is completely blown off of it or not, you can get on it and slide.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to go snow cutting on grassy surface,
no.
Especially a plowed field, which can be pretty rutted. So you can have a lot of luck going out on ice and snow. As far as choice of skis versus snowboard, I've used both with snow kiting. And if you're comfortable with skis and you're a beginner kiter, I think the skis are much more ergonomic. It's a lot more comfortable to stand on skis because you have independent foot motion.
Right, okay.
So when the kite goes down, which it will, you're standing there comfortably versus with a snowboard, the kite goes on the surface and you're sitting on your butt and you have to unhook your boots and deal with the kite. So
okay.
The nice thing about the skis is you drop,
And you've gone pretty quick in skis too.
Yeah.
I've talked to you. You've had some...
Yeah, that can be fun.
Pretty sweet speed burns.
Ice,
yeah, on the ice.
7 miles per
hour.
Wow. At a GPS found one time. That's not the regional record, though. Guy out of Syracuse, 55, I think. Yeah, Pat from Syracuse.
Wow.
Yeah, 55 miles per hour.
Wow.
On skis. Oneida Lake.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
So I've heard people, too, talk about Rothfuss Park. Probably you've got to consider a lot of things you just talked about.
Yep.
In
Penfield. I've had some fun there. It's a nice, big, smooth, it's soccer field, so it's not a plowed farmer's field. Another place is in Gananda. There's a private property, which is a small airport, which they've been nice enough to give permission to in previous years. I don't know if we have official permission.
You better know somebody. Or,
there are guys who are in touch with those folks and usually get permission on an annual basis.
Cool.
And that's on a hill. I haven't had a lot of luck there. I did some of my – I got slammed one of my first times on a kite there.
Ow.
And dragged into a pumpkin patch. Oh. Don't do that, kids.
Think about Crane of the kite world. I've heard Andrew, who lives in Dundee, but Finger Lakes guy.
Yeah.
He's got a spot, I think, that's got a little bit of
That's the thing, is there are definitely plenty of venues to be found if you're a diehard snow kiter and you're looking to travel to snow kite. I'm sure there's a lot of great areas you can go do. I know the Tug Hill Plateau, I've never kited up there, but Don and lots of guys have gone up there, that Nutcracker Suite is...
Mm-hmm. Should we? I mean...
Yeah.
I think that kind of wraps up the snow kite portion of this. But yeah, Finger Lakes Coffee Roasters coffee break. What do you think?
It's nice.
It's in there. There's coffee in that cup.
I mean, I had lunch, and now it's almost as if I'm having dessert. Liquid form.
Delish. So so here we are. It is the Finger Lakes Coffee Roasters coffee break here on the podcast. Nutcracker Sweet, S-W-E-E-T. And it's their favorite holiday, Christmas season brew. And it is only one coffee today. Typically, we'll have two coffees in here. But this one's kind of a mix, as they describe it, a mix of vanilla, hazelnut, chestnut, and cinnamon. And you said it. Yum.
Yeah.
It's good. If you did put a log on the fire to start this podcast and you're enjoying that cup, hopefully, you get your hands wrapped around that warm mug of coffee, and it's good. It's enjoyable. It's not too sweet. Mm-hmm. It's my observation. Mm-hmm. Do you see sugar plum fairies dancing in your head as you?
No, but there's something swimming in my cup.
Oh, that could be my bad with brewing it.
No, I'm kidding.
We could be a little bit of the sugar at the bottom. I put a little bit of sugar in there. It's good.
It is tasty.
And you know, when I was picking it up today, I picked it up at their Pittsburgh Plaza location, and their empire continues to grow. It was busy. It was seasonally decorated, but there were two or three women behind the counter kind of learning the deal. There it is. You can see it on the screen, the Nutcracker Suite, and the description of it. You can have, they ship coffee from their website, and it's available to drink at a number of cafes around our region. And I mean, it's good stuff. It's local. It's part of that local movement. And they roast it here in Farmington, New York. But I was saying, with their empire continuing to grow, there were some women there behind the counter kind of finding out how, getting a tour of the facility there, finding out how they do what they do behind the counter, because they're going to be opening up a cafe in Mount Morris. Mm. So, and the Finger Lakes Coffee Roasters Coffee, I think, is going to be a big part of what they're doing. So it was cool to see that it's growing, and it's good to be a part of it.
Yeah,
For us.
And this is a real coffee break, viewers.
Yeah.
If you ever notice, when you're watching TV or movie, they'll act like they're drinking something. There's nothing in that can. There's nothing in that cup. There's no, first of all, that you don't see them swallow. So it's just them putting a... Come on.
You're right. I'm out now, unfortunately.
Makes me just...
But it was... There was coffee.
Me the wrong way.
Coffee in here. There she is. There you go. And there's the... Wow. That, you know, people producing the show in here, this is fantastic, actually. There it is. I mean, that you can order it online. They ship it. They've got so many unique flavors on their bean wall. They have a bean wall where they at the location where they roast all their coffee.
Oh, okay.
And the people are always pretty knowledgeable about it. I remember last year seeing a seasonal kiosk pop up at Eastview Mall in Victor, New York, and selling their stuff. And it's good stuff. The people that own it, there's just two people, and they have a great staff. But their outdoor activity people, Larry over there. Larry Wurgis, he is a windsurfer and kiter. We've mentioned on shows previously, and among being a skier, this is available at Bristol Mountain. When you come in for a Bristol Mountain coffee break, if you put the boards on your feet, and as the winter gets closer, which we're planning to do with our family this year, but I'm sure you'll get out too. But
yeah,
it's good people. It's good coffee.
Yeah,
it's good coffee.
Good.
So glad that they're part of the show. Behind you there, that is a board that I have not seen before. You've been a busy guy with work, and that you weren't able to be on the podcast for a couple of months because when it's busy, it's busy. What's your therapy, Jay? Where did that board come from? That's a pretty sweet looking board. What is it? What are you using it for?
Well,
what's it replacing?
It's a replacement for my 5.9 Celeritas, which is another brand, and that's a Ben Wilson Drifter.
Okay.
It's actually a 5.5. I wanted the 5.9, but they didn't have it in stock, so I thought I'd go with a smaller one, which it's a very similar shape to the Celeritas. Around here, we have, highly variable winds and often choppy conditions, and you want a board that can blast through that. And then when there's a lull in the wind, you want a board that can plane through that. So you can't tell by looking at it from me, like here in this camera angle, but it's a pretty low rocker board.
Yep.
So
I can see that from where I am.
Rocker is like the
front to back.
Yeah. It's got some nose rocker, but it's flat going through the tail, and that allows you to plane through the lulls in the wind and give you better upwind ability.
It seems like it has a, to me, I mean, and I'm not one that would know, but it seems like it's got some pretty good tail width to it as well.
Yep. It's kind of a medium volume board. Mm-hmm. You don't want something too corky or thick, mm-hmm. but you also, unless you want a high wind board, you don't want something that's too thin. Wow. So it's got a medium medium width also, and it does have some width through the tail, which is part of its good planing and upwind ability. So that's a fun board. I had a chance to ride it a couple days, first on Saturday, or I'm sorry, Monday, and then on Tuesday.
Cool.
Yeah.
So it's a good-looking board.
Yeah. So it's part of an ambassadorship. I don't think I told you about this, that Ben Wilson Surf is the brand, and you can see their logo there behind my head. And I was on his website looking at some videos a couple months ago, and there was a suggested link for different videos after the one video ended, and there's a link that said become an ambassador for Ben Wilson Surf. So I being that a surf oriented kite company, mm-hmm. I was always following the media that he would put out as far as instructional videos and his team riders, one of which is a guy I gotten to know via another friend.
Cool.
And so, long story short, I applied to be an ambassador, and then I emailed my friend Ian Aldridge, who's the team writer for them, and just said, "Hey, Ian, I just applied for an ambassadorship. If you could suggest anything I might do to be accepted as ambassador, let me know what I can do." And he said, "I'll talk to the guys." And so that turned into a couple days later them accepting me as an ambassador.
Okay.
So what that means is I'm not a team rider or anything.
Okay, but you're
That's
pretty cool.
Yeah, it's kind of exciting. I purchased the board, and I purchased some kites, which maybe when we do our what we love or our review portion of the show, can talk a little bit about the some of that. But
that's really cool. So, congrats on that, Jay. That's a big deal.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. So if nothing else, it puts me in touch with some folks who are doing the type of riding I like to do. Not that we have like Jimmy King, an ocean wave around here, but we get some pretty big waves, and in the right conditions, they can be definitely as big, not as good quality, obviously. But it's
but you'll have
deal.
The right gear when
it's
it is
the real deal
when it that, when it's
yeah,
time.
Yeah, that's it's been an adjustment. It's a different experience riding. The kites are they behave differently than the kites I've been riding for the last 4 years. So it's and I've only had a handful of sessions on them, so it's been an adjustment figuring out the nuances of the
very
new
cool
gear. So it's been an interesting thing.
That compliments kind of, to you for seeing that and going after it and seeing what you could make from it. That's really cool.
Thanks. Yeah.
Wow. Kind of I can't wait to talk about that. I mean, we can talk about it. I mean, it seems like we just did kind of talk about it, but just hear the.
Well, I don't have a full review for any of the gear yet, so I can't really
talk at fine.
Length. But
well, and what a big step, too, to like step out of what you know and you're comfortable.
Yeah.
And
that's funny you say that, because that's one of the biggest challenges of this, is you go from what you know to something that is marketed and is designed to be a different animal, that being the kites. And the kites truly are a different animal. And to clarify that a little bit for people, the kites I'm on now is more of an all-around kite,
mm-hmm.
and very, very friendly for really all conditions, to a kite that is wave-specific, which...
what are those characteristics?
Without getting into too much detail, the kite flies in a different position, so it's a little harder to drive up wind, because it flies more forward, with the idea being that drift is a very important part of a wave kite. So what I mean by that is, if you're riding down a wave and the kite is kind of, you're following the kite along, the mm-hmm. kite just stays in the air, is very stable in that kind of a situation.
Okay.
And by being a little deeper in the wind window, the kite is more likely to just drift without you having to think about it. And that's a big part of
it. So you can concentrate on what you're doing on the wave.
That's right. And I did have, on my first or second session with the new kites, have that sensation that I didn't have to monitor the kite, and I was able to concentrate on doing turns on the wave.
Jay, that's cool.
So that was it's but it's a, at the same time, completely different in the fact that it doesn't have as much feedback as my more all-around kites.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're a bit more forgiving, and I'm not used to having a forgiving kite. I'm used to having one that gives me more feedback, and I am able to control them maybe a little more with a little more quicker response time, that they respond faster than my other kites than these.
Yeah.
So it's been an interesting experience having
that's really
tried
cool.
some new stuff.
Congrats!
So. But the board's a lot of fun. It's skatey. It's shorter than my the board it's replacing.
Yep.
So it's been a lot of fun so far. Really pleased with it. Looks cool too.
Cool. Yeah, it looks really cool. Thank you. I mean, bring color.
So this is
back.
Part of, I think you're saying, retail therapy. I don't know if you mentioned that, but
yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you had a lot of stuff in the back of your car, truck when I saw you.
Kind of a consumerist whore the past couple months. Trying to get some satisfaction by buying stuff, and don't do this at home, kids. It doesn't work.
It makes great discussion stuff, though, for podcasts.
We could have a whole other podcast.
Wow,
more stuff. So
cool.
Speaking of which, we could talk about the camera.
Yeah, that's another thing. And when I mentioned before, what I saw I saw the footage that you had that nobody had shot of you. I saw the video footage that no one had shot of you kiteboarding out at. Southwick, is that?
Southwick, yes.
Southwick. Yep. And when I say nobody, tell us.
Yeah, I use this device. Another thing I've purchased as part of my retail therapy it's called Solo Shot camera mount, and it's a robotic camera mount that.
Let's see if I can do this.
Yeah, actually, I think Jim can probably adjust the camera. I can pick it up and show it here with my camera, maybe. Let's see. Okay, so.
Oh, there we go. You can see it perfect.
So, this is a standard tripod, and then the orange thing is the robot. And it has I believe it talks to the satellite, and the satellite talks to a controller that I wear on my arm, okay? And you sync them up. There's a setup process which syncs the controller to the base.
Okay.
And then you mount your camera of choice to the top of the base, and it has a... drive in here that tracks you horizontally and tracks you vertically, and so it follows you based on where your position is
on that sensor
via
you wear.
That sensor, and the sensor you can control then the camera, turn it on and off while you're on the water. That is made possible with this additional accessory, which is the camera controller, which snaps onto the base like so, and that allows with these cables to control the camera, which is screwed on top there. And so it automatically zooms and then follows you with a horizontal and vertical tilt, which is pretty neat. So
it's very cool.
And I don't know if I've got a little piece queued up here. I don't know if it'll be something that could be zoomed in on.
Maybe
but
get a little
probably
closer
not
in.
Too much glare, maybe. But here's a little footage. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get this.
Maybe can you tip it down a little? Tip it
closer.
Closer. Oh, there we go. Perfect.
This is yesterday at Southwick. Just a little quick snippet. So this is a robot tracking me. I've got an armband on my arm, and it followed me.
Fantastic. Oh,
yeah, fall down like an idiot.
Well,
which I'm pretty good at.
That is what is it called? I don't know if we mentioned Solo Shot. Is that what it's called?
Solo Shot 2 is this variety here. Let me shut this off. And you can see it at the bottom here. Solo Shot 2 is the product, and it's available at soloshot.com.
That's cool. No sponsor. We aren't plugging it. I mean, we're plugging a product that's kind of cool.
Yeah. I've always been a gadget guy. I was like the first person I knew to actually order a digital clock radio when I was a kid in the 70s. I've always been a gadget guy. What
cool.
can I say?
That's very cool.
And I've probably also always been a consumerist whore.
Yeah. So. Well, thank you for doing that.
Is that R-rated, Jim?
That's
TVMA, kids. Okay.
Hey, what are you gonna do? Well, the Seneca meter's back up and running, and there's some debate on whether it's, whether it's giving us good stuff. We owe We owe Meter Man, Rick Griffin, for going down and taking care of that. Unfortunately, his wife, Sue, the lovely Sue Griffin, won't be able to joke. Man, you know, when Rick says, man, I wish I knew what it was doing on Seneca, she can't say, well, why don't you go out in the garage and see what the meter says it's doing? Because forever, Rick had the old meter that had been taken down in his garage where he lives, keeping it for the folks at Weatherflow. But they put a new one up, and it got, you know, they don't know what happened to it. Then it stopped reading correctly, so they sent Rick the part, and Rick climbed up the pole like a lumberjack and and fixed it up for us. So it's given us readings. We'll takes time to kind of figure out, is it, you know, is it right on what the wind is doing? Is it a couple of clicks higher, a couple of clicks lower? Is the direction a little tweak? Yeah. But it's great to have that back there, right?
Definitely. Yeah, you know? Definitely. And, you know, I think some of the question of the accuracy of it may have been based on the location of the other reading that was taken that day. And based on, like you said, the wind direction, the location of the fixed meter may not accurately represent the direction and speed at the other side of the lake, because it's a couple miles away.
Yeah, a couple
miles away. And if you've got, you know, west in it or east in it, it can read oddly. So that's why I usually, when I'm trying to make my mind up driving anywhere to go sail, is to get as much data as I can. Yeah. Like I look at the Penn Yan meter to see what it's doing, to give an idea, because like, I don't have access to the real-time data at the Seneca meter. And if you put that together with the Ramada webcam and the Penn Yan reading.
Triangulating.
Yeah, just kind of put it all together and make your mind up. So.
Sweet.
But so what have you been up to? Have you been having some fun lately?
I haven't gotten on the water a ton, but I started getting the emails from Ken Altfather at Bay Creek, that they're rounding up the longboard land paddle posse, which is, you know, I got my longboard skateboard down here.
Oh, yes.
And that came from Bay Creek, but they do a really cool thing. It's a paddle shop. Here I am. It's a paddle shop, and I've got my, this is a longboard. It's a gravity hypercarve. But it's got a little wave on there because I like the carving aspect. It's a little tail on it too. But the wind hasn't, you know, I haven't been able to get out when the wind's been blowing because of my job, and it's dark too early. So when I get a chance, I get out the paddle and paddle around the neighborhood. I brought the paddle down. Let me reach here. It might not work really well.
You're caught on a cord.
Feeling in the... There we go. In the dark. Got it. I'm good. I'm free. So there is the end of the... This is a Kahuna Creations big stick. And they've changed around the design of them a little bit. These are two rubber pads. I wouldn't describe them as wheels because they don't turn. But you can move them. They're vulcanized rubber, and I'm flat here and flat here from paddling, and the stick is wood. They've gone with a couple different designs, and there's some other companies kind of coming on board doing the same thing, and it's a good way to get out and just kind of feel like you're on the water. And I commented to you that I have my old skateboard from when I was a kid.
Yep.
There you can see it. This is the road end. That's the business end of the paddle. And the other end has just a wooden handle, just like any other paddle would. And, you know, they sell them at Bay Creek, and it's a lot of fun. There's a bunch of guys and girls that have got it into the stand-up paddling that have picked up this a little
bit. Cross-training?
You fall, you fall hard, because it's asphalt, not water.
Yeah.
You know, I have gotten my butt kicked a couple times. But it's
good core engagement.
Yeah, it really is. It's good. It's real exercise. It's good exercise. And so I've been doing that a little bit. And my son can do it, and we can go out together. I made him one using a lacrosse ball and a stick and a broomstick, because he's, you know, a lot smaller.
Oh, cool.
But had a ton of fun getting out on. He gets out on my old 1986 like Sims skateboard. With the plastic hand grips on the side, I got some real good bearings for it, and some larger longboard wheels.
Oh, so they
that
roll,
are real sticky
they
and
roll
rolly.
Nice,
and I loosen the trucks up a lot, and you can just turn and carve. And when I get on it, it's a lot of fun. Just,
yeah.
It's really cool. And I don't know. I would encourage anybody to give it a shot. So I've been getting into that a little bit, and that's been helping get me through besides the holiday shopping and all the other stuff that'll take up life. But, yeah, that's what I've been up to. So I love, you know, we normally do the things I love segment. Like, I love this. It kind of, you know, gets me attached to I'm not on the water, but I feel like I'm on the water kind of deal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
That's good.
That's that. So.
Yeah, I like the I like paddling my SUP for just a similar kind of workout, and it's not you're not kiting or sailing, but you're on the water, you're on a board, and that's kind of what it comes back to for me, is that any day I can be on any kind of board, I'm pretty excited, you know, to be.
You know, even for me, it can be under 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Getting home real quick. And they just paved our neighborhood this past fall.
Nice.
So I've got some nice asphalt. I'm in a cul-de-sac, just looping around back and forth. I can jump and switch feet. And, so I'm facing forward. And, I'll hold the paddle up and use it as a boom.
Yeah.
You know, and pretend I'm flipping the sail. And just like balance-wise, what I'm concentrating on.
Oh,
it helps.
Absolutely.
I think I'm sure the neighbors look at me like I'm a complete freak. But and that might happen just anyways. The people look at me and think I'm a weirdo.
Yeah,
but
well,
but embrace that.
That's
right?
Their problem, not yours.
If you own that, if I own that nerdiness, then you can't. You know,
they say
that's me.
Grow up, and I say never.
Yeah, what are you talking about?
Growing young.
Yeah, you know what? Don't give in.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, so that's for me. That's it. We're kind of getting to the end of another show. I want to mention before we do kind of wrap up, maybe you've got any parting things you want to talk about. We'll have in February the Rochester Wind Sports. It's kind of, this will be the third annual Hi-Ho, the hook in and hang out. Just get the guys and girls together to come out to just hang out for an afternoon in February on a Sunday. We don't all get together and see each other necessarily, but as a group come together and just hang out and kind of see all of who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a cool community thing.
Yeah,
so that'll be
growing
up.
Each year.
Yeah, so it's been a lot of fun. Yeah. We had nearly 30 people last year. And, you know, we've always got some Finger Lakes Coffee Roasters coffee we're giving away. In the past, I've included some Full Sail Brewery sessions that we give away with a raffle. And this year I'm even thinking about trying to get some growlers from or grumblers from Lock 32. Jay and I like to meet up at Lock 32 Brewing and show and place in Pittsburgh, but they've got some great beer there.
Mm-hmm.
And raffling those off too. And it all, you know, it's less than $10. You gotta buy your own beverages, but that's coming up. And I don't know.
Great.
Got anything we didn't hit on you want to make sure we get before we get out of here?
I think I'm all set if you're all set.
Yeah, I'm all set. So I guess get out from under the blanket if you're at home listening to us, and go stoke the fire, and I guess that's the end of another show. Go get in line at Best Buy for to buy that 95-inch TV that I must have, and I'll sleep overnight outside on the sidewalk and get ready for the Black Friday mayhem.
I've done my consumerist activities for some time here.
Yeah, we've got pretty small. We've got a couple classic TVs at our house, and they work just fine for now. But all right. So if you have any other questions, you can get a hold of Jay or I through RochesterWindSports.com. Hit us up on the contact there. And for the FLBS podcast, I'm Doug. He's Jay.
Thanks for watching.
We'll see you out there.